Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Sometimes life doesn't fall apart. It just quietly rearranges itself. Children leave, roles shift, mirrors say things we don't love. Holidays don't look the way they used to. And somewhere in the middle of all that, we're supposed to remain grateful, flexible, and here's our theme for the day, high on life. Today's guest believes that ordinary moments carry extraordinary lessons, if we're willing to notice them. From writing a love letter to belly fat, to finding forgiveness at a Billy Joel concert, she shares stories that are humorous, tender, and surprisingly practical. Her newest book, High on Life, offers 36 slice of life stories, each one ending with a simple takeaway. It's the kind of book you can dip into with your morning coffee and come away thinking differently about your own story. If you've ever wondered who you are now or what comes next, this conversation will meet you right where you are. And when we're done, you may just want to pick up her book and toast life yourself. Listen now to my conversation with Lori Kleiner Eckert. Sometimes life is hard. Bodies change, parents age, children grow up, traditions shift, and somewhere in the middle of it all, we're supposed to stay grateful, flexible, and maybe even, dare I say, high on life. Today's guest believes that ordinary moments carry extraordinary lessons, if we're willing to look for them. From belly fat to Billy Joel, I love those two. From forgiveness to reinvention, she tells slice of life stories that feel personal but somehow land right in our own living rooms. She describes herself as a cheerleader for real life, the kind that says, yes, it's difficult. And yes, you can handle it. Lori Kleiner Eckert, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you. Been listening to some of your podcasts, and wow, you've got some really great people on. I'm happy to be among them.
I just love this podcast, yeah, and it's so interesting. It just keeps me vital and young and informed. I'm always learning something, so I'm excited to learn something today. This is going to be
Good.
great.
Good,
You
good.
call yourself a cheerleader for real life. Where did that role begin for you?
Yeah, I do call myself a cheerleader, and it started so long ago when I was in high school. And really, a lot of people used to call me and tell me their problems. And sometimes I would get off the phone crying. And my dad would say to me, "If you can't get off the phone without being upset, you can't talk on the phone anymore." So I've always, I don't know how or why people have talked to me when I was first divorced and moved into my house and was leery of repairmen and stuff like that. This one guy encouraged me to come out and talk to him on the front porch, and I thought, proposition, what is this? No, he wanted to tell me his problems. It says, like, do I have it stamped on my forehead? Good listener. I don't know what this is, So I've always been that person. And so when I accidentally became a motivational speaker as a result of needing a paid profession after divorce, it worked so well for me. Because I could speak to a whole group, I could encourage a whole group. And yes, some of them came up to me afterwards and told me their specifics, but there really wasn't time for that. It was a room full of people, and the organizers, moved them along and everything. I mean, I want to hear everyone's problems, but it just really isn't possible. So I have been a cheerleader really for a long time. And I definitely think life is difficult. I'm leading a charmed life. I mean, I have so much going for me. And if my life is difficult, what's it like for anyone else? One of the stories in High on Life is talking about getting professional, psychological help. And I confess, I mean, I don't think it's really a confession. My publisher thinks it's astounding I would say such a thing. But I went to counseling for 20 years from the time my son was 14 until the therapist retired or I'd still be going. And my problem was not that he was flunking out of school. It wasn't that he was on drugs. It wasn't a gang he was hanging out with. My problem with him was that he would get himself to the mall with his boyfriends after school and need a ride home at rush hour when I was cooking dinner. So with apologies to, but I had a run, I had a car that ran, I had everything. I had food to cook. There's so many people who parts of that story, they would be at work as opposed to at home. They'd be worrying about what they're gonna make for dinner or if there's money for dinner. My problem was, very privileged problem. I had to go pick Scott up at the mall. So I've always, so I've always seen life as difficult, and I've gone for therapy when I need it. And after my wonderful gal retired, I've actually been handling it all on my own. But that particular story in High on Life ends with a suicide prevention hotline number because if you fall into a black hole emotionally, I want you to go do something about it. You don't have to suffer. There's help out there. So anyway, yeah. So I'm a cheerleader. I have it all, and it's still difficult. And really, that's another story in High on Life. What happens when you have it all and you're still not happy? It's like, oh, how to handle this one. So yeah, I am a cheerleader. I am.
Well, as you were telling the story about Scott, I had the thought that my Scott would have received the message, you got yourself to school, you got yourself to the mall, get yourself home.
Oh my
So,
gosh.
yeah, so we both have sons called Scott.
That was some tough love you had going there.
Oh, yeah, I am really a tough love mom. I'm so sorry. They've all turned out like I'm okay. They're okay, I think. I don't know. Maybe they're going to therapy as well. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure they all are, and it's all the mom's fault, and that's okay,
No,
Not
that
a
was our
mother.
generation. That was our generation. Everything was our parents' fault. Okay, now you've talked about being high on life, and we're mostly talking about your book here. We might be tempted to call it Chai on Life, but that pronunciation is wrong.
Well, there's lots of ways you can call this book. So I do like it, actually. I'm loving it that people, so it's Chai spelled CHAI. And so that does look like we're talking about chai tea. And I love that in that it's such a comforting thing to drink. So my book, I think, is 36 stories of comfort. So with your chai tea, enjoy. But it's really CHAI is a mystical word in Hebrew, and it means life. So if you know any Jewish people and you've been at the bar mitzvah or wedding or whatever, and they drink a toast, they drink l'chaim, to life. So that's what I was doing here. I was drinking a toast to life. And another thing about chai also represents the number 18 in Hebrew. So Jewish people often give gifts in increments of 18, so you get $18 or $36. I can't do the math, $54, whatever, because it's a good luck number.
$180. Nice and
$180.
easy.
Yeah, inflation. But when I first proposed the book to my publisher, it had 18 stories in it, which made it even more perfect. And but he said he was loath to publish such a short book. Could we add 18 more stories? Could we have 36? Sure. So we added more stories to it. And then one more thing about High on Life is one of my favorite movies is Pretty Woman with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, and they're first time together, she sneaks off to the bathroom. She's going to do a little brushing her teeth routine, and he thinks she snuck off to do drugs. So it comes in on her in the bathroom and she hides her dental floss behind her back and he kind of wrestles her for it. And he sees what it is. He said, "Oh, I thought you were getting high." And she said, "High on life, baby, high on life." So, I like that. I'm trying real hard myself, in spite of everything being so difficult, to be high on life. And quite frankly, I find it easier at age. I just had 74th birthday. I find it easier. now that I'm older? Is it easier for you
Okay.
now that you're older?
I think so. I think I've always been the perpetual Pollyanna. I think I drove a few friends crazy with that. But as much as I can overthink a lot of stuff, I always try to find the bright side of stuff. So in that regard, in many ways, you and I are like opposites. That's what makes the world go round. Now you've been touching on it, and I want to go there. Is you frame the book High on Life with a Jewish slant. What else does that slant add?
Oh, well, it just adds a lot of really neat things.
Teens.
So there are 36 stories, and I would say maybe maximum 10 have anything that would really count as Jewish content. But one of them you mentioned, so that I pegged the book as 36 stories ranging in topic from belly fat to Billy Joel. So the Billy Joel story has to do with going to his concert and his song Big Shot. And when he sang Big Shot, however many thousands of people at the stadium stood up and sang Big Shot, every single word with vigor, with anger, with I don't know what. Everybody knew that. So that song has been called his most, I'll moderate it a little bit here, his most ticked off song.
Okay.
You can imagine what
It's
they were
okay.
going to
You
say.
can say those words. It's okay.
Yeah, in Rolling Stone. But anyway, and so it's a song about anger. So I happened to be at that concert right at the Jewish high holiday season. So we have Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year, and then we have Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, 10 days apart. And during those 10 days, you're supposed to think of all the things you've done wrong and you're supposed to make amends. So I was thinking about making amends. So it came to my mind that Billy Joel is earning royalties on his anger. But I'm not, you know. If I'm angry, I'm the one who's suffering from it. So that's where the Jewish slant comes into it. And then there's another one I like in your description of the podcast that you say you're embracing the journey. So there's a story in there of a letter that I write to myself on my, I guess it was my 70th birthday. All of the stories in High on Life have a full color illustration at the end with a one line takeaway. So the one line takeaway from the story of writing myself a letter at age 70 was feel the joy in the journey, and which is such a trite thing to say, but where I catch on is that the word joy starts off with J, or the word journey starts off with JO and it ends with Y. So the joy is in the journey. And in that story, I tell of another prayer, or another Jewish, in this case, a poem. And it starts off, birth is a beginning and death is an ending. And life is a journey, and we go from health to illness and back we pray to health again. We go from, and one of the things we go from is from defeat to defeat to defeat. So that's definitely my life is difficult, philosophy. And yet, it doesn't make any difference because it's the journey that counts. So that's how it's got a little Jewish slant to it. And I think those are really neat things. I think anybody would want to read that poem about life, birth being a beginning and death an ending and life the journey. It's great.
And as you were saying, defeat to defeat to defeat, I have a meme somewhere in my hundreds of memes here that actually says, you may have defeat, but never be defeated.
Right.
And you it really made me think the first time I heard it, and I went, "Wow, that's so true." You know, you just can't
That's
lie down.
beautiful. So you are also into all the memes. I am too.
Oh, I have made hundreds of them.
Yeah, me too.
So now you keep on talking about 36 stories. In my notes, I had asked why that structure, but you've explained that it's a like 18 and 18. I'm going to ask you a question. If one of your 36 stories had to disappear forever, which one would you fight to keep,
Which
and
one?
why?
The one I would fight to keep, so is also my favorite story,
Okay, yeah.
is the one about my mom. And my mom, Rose is her name, and well, I guess your audience won't be seeing my background, but I'm in a
Your
rose
rose background,
pink,
yeah.
and it's going to be even more rose covered soon. But anyway, my mom's name was Rose, and my dad. Everybody in the world loved my dad. I mean, they just loved him. That's just all there is to it. And my mom was, what is the expression? What am I, chopped liver? So my mom was chopped liver standing next to my dad. She was also wonderful, but who knew, So, and as a teenager, my mom said, she always said she was so grateful that we got along during my teen years. And I thought, who is she thinking about? Certainly not me. I wasn't getting along with her. So throughout life, I always intended to be close with her, but then she got sick. Her mother lived to my great gra my grandmother lived to be 2 years shy of her 98th birthday. So we just thought my mom would have a very long life. And instead, she died at 81 of lung cancer after a 5 week illness. And when she died, a friend of mine said, the more you look for your mom, the more you'll find her inside your heart, which turned out to be so true. So, mom died in 2002. So, we've got 24 years almost in, and she's there. And I see as an adult, she was a wonderful mother. What was wrong with her is that she was always there. But of course she was always there. She never required me or my brother to wash a dish, to make a bed. We didn't have to do anything. She did it all. And nobody appreciated her. I didn't appreciate her. So that was in St. Louis, and when my ex-husband and I moved to California when we started having kids, and my mom would come for a whole month to stay and help, but she wasn't comfortable with the baby. She was comfortable cleaning the house, cooking, doing that kind of stuff. So that's what she did, and I took care of the baby. Well, I have to tell you, Agnes, this woman folded the bath towels wrong. She folded them in half first, the width way instead of the length way, like I was going to hang it up on the rod. And it was like, I mean, oh my God, I was going to have to refold the towel that she washed and dried, So this was a kind of craziness that I had with this amazing, wonderful woman who pampered me all the years of our life together. And so as I got older, so she died when I was 51. That's when I really started to see that not everybody had this wonderful childhood that I had, and that she was amazing and wonderful. I said of her that if she found out today that something needed to happen yesterday, she'd make it happen yesterday. She just was so efficient. I was not, So anyway, so that story ends with me coming to terms with really how wonderful she was, what a fool I was. But I say, should we meet in the afterlife on a cold, crisp day, she will most likely say to me, put on gloves and a hat. And I'm most likely going to be annoyed by that. But I hope I will take a deep breath and pause and respond in kind, which is to say, I love you too, Mom. whether or not I put on the hat and gloves. So that's my favorite story because for many reasons, because it helped me really understand the journey. There we go again, that I had been on with my mom. And I have three kids that with whom I'm close, and I think we get along great, but maybe they're saying the same things. You know, my mom said we got along so great as teenagers. Who is she thinking of? So, you know, so as I anticipate my children on the psychiatrist's couch for 20 years talking about me, ooh, that would be kind of cool, actually. Anyway, I want them to know that the relationship with a mom is an odd thing, and I want them to walk away knowing, I love you, I love you, I love you. Whatever I did, that's what I was trying to say, as was my mom. Oh my God. So yeah. And so the takeaway from that story is that there's many ways to say I love you. And my mom did it. You know, this isn't in the book, but this will be another Jewish reference, you know, in Fiddler on the Roof. You know, Tevye asks Goldie, do you love me? You know, and he says, do I what? You know, after, you know, I've milked your cows, I've slept in your bed. You know, if that's not love, what is? So that was my mother. My mother was milk the
Well, and I think too, I mean, you talk about it in reference to your mother, but how many relationships can we actually use the same story about that, you know, like people don't always say I love you. They don't always do things that please you, but they have other ways of showing how they care for you. And so just extrapolating from your story about your mom, we can think about that in terms of the bigger picture as well. And so we should think about that.
Well, Pam, the psychologist that I saw forever, had the best, always had the best analogies, you know. And so what she would say on that is, my ex-husband's family, when you were sick, you got a cold washcloth on your head, wet cloth, washcloth on your head. In my family, when you were sick, you got tea and cinnamon toast. So there is no way I am ever going to be content with a wa wet wash rag on my head. Are you serious? Where's the tea and toast? So yeah, there's lots of ways to say I love you. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Now, what is it about everyday moments? Now, you talk about a grandchild at a mirror, your sh shift at Thanksgiving. What is it that makes those stories such powerful teachers?
Well, I think that people, I identify with them, so I don't know. That's been my experience that people identify with what I talk about. So I'm not doing rocket science, you know, I'm doing everyday stuff. And when I was the motivational speaker person, I once did a program for the Kentucky Library Association, and some lady from some other Kentucky something or other came to hear me speak to see if she wanted me to come to talk to her group. And she just sat there and didn't move, didn't smile, didn't do a thing. So the next day I called her and I said, I guess you didn't like my program. She said, are you kidding me? If I would have smiled, if I would have done anything but sit there stiff, I would have been sobbing because I agreed with everything you said. I identified with everything you said. So I think that's where we are. So your listeners haven't read those stories. Should I tell one of those stories or the other? Do you like one of the stories, the grandkids in the mirror or the
Sure,
Thanksgiving story? The grandkids in the mirror are the this all happened, you know, kind of pandemic during the pandemic when life was so difficult. But I was once playing with my granddaughter, Cece. I also call her Cookie, and her name is really Camille, but be that as it may. I was once playing Barbie dolls with her, and she gave me a Barbie doll and she said, here, fix her hair. So I made Barbie's hair one thick braid down her back, or maybe I threw it over her shoulder. How should I remember? But anyway, and I showed it to her. I said, what do you think of this? And she said, horrible. It's like, oh. So every time I looked in a mirror after that to see what my hair looked like, I thought, horrible, you know?
Oh
So
dear.
then a few years later, another grandchild was over, little baby Jude, who's named because of Hey Jude or lots of other reasons too, but the family loves that song. But anyway, he always wanted to be John Lennon and he let me be Paul Decartney. So
Oh
anyway,
dear.
but I had three pairs of granny glasses, purple, pink, and blue, maybe. I don't know what. And he'd put on a pair, and we played this game. We'd go over and look in the mirror. I said, "Look how handsome you look." Oh, he did. You know, then he'd run back and get another pair, and look how handsome you look. So after playing that for a couple of weeks, he would put on the glasses and he went to that same mirror that I always look in and he said, "Look how handsome I am." And so now when I look in that mirror, I've gone from horrible to handsome without changing anything, without changing my hair or anything. I changed my mindset. So I wrote that little story during the pandemic when life was really just so difficult, and encouraging people maybe to, I don't know what, find the handsome in the mirror instead of the horrible if they could. I was a cheerleader, see? It was
There you
bad
go.
times. And I have to tell you, when I wrote the book and when I promoted the book to publishers, I really thought that we were going to have a long, long, long time of aching over the pandemic, and that my little pep talks in 36 little stories were going to be the chai tea, the soothing balm that people needed. And instead, don't you think the pandemic is completely gone? We're not impacted anymore. It's kind of mind-boggling. Or am I wrong in thinking that?
Well, I still work in elder care, so I still have masks in my car and I still, wash like a crazy person and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, so it's all about lifestyle. That just happens to be my lifestyle. So
Yeah,
ask
yeah.
somebody else and I'm sure they'd agree with you. So,
Yeah, yeah.
but
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, you know, there was so much talk about loneliness and all that. And what was his name? He was the medical,
Oh, Fauci in the States. I'm in Canada.
no, not him, Vivek somebody or other, who was the Surgeon General maybe. And he put out this whole big report about loneliness and making connection and stuff like that. Which I actually quoted him in my, you know, when you propose a book to a publisher, you have to write this massive proposal. And so that was part of my proposal. Look, this is a national epidemic, but I didn't really think people have recovered. Which is great, I guess. I guess.
I'm going to get into loneliness shortly. But we're talking to women in midlife, and a lot of them are saying, "Who am I now?" What does personal reinvention actually look like at this stage?
Well, I have such good news about personal reinvention because I believe that we've all done it 100 times. And so we know how. We might not think we know how, but we do. So I say that we've reinvented ourselves, that there are happy reinventions and sad reinventions. So the happy reinventions are graduate from college, you get your first job, you get married, you have the kid, you know, the baby or whatever. And those are reinventions, but what comes next? So there was a Broadway musical, Avenue Q, and the opening line, this guy comes out on stage and he says, "I just got a bachelor's degree in English." And the second line was, "What do you do with a bachelor's degree in English?" So that was a happy reinvention, yet he didn't know what to do. And in the same way as if he had lost a job, he might sit on the sofa and be immobilized by the enormity of that happy reinvention. So I have a recipe for reinvention that I keep intentionally very simple, because often when you're reinventing yourself, it's an unhappy, reinvention. It's the death of a loved one. It's a divorce. It's a flunked a test, flunked a flunked out of school, whatever. And so when you're going through those tough ones, you really just want to be on the sofa with the blanket over your head. So, two-step project. Step number one is that you have to have a healthy routine. So, I don't want to tell you what a healthy routine is. What I want you to do is I want you to write down, and I really like an accountability log. So, write down what you do on a daily basis when life is going well. So, do you brush your teeth every day, take a shower every night, do you go to the gym twice a week? Whatever you do when life is going well for you, that's your basic routine. And in the rough times, you have to do it. Now, my basic routine is really stringent because I've been at this for years. So mine is healthy eating, lots of exercise, sleep hygiene is a really important thing to consider. All those things that, you could feel overwhelmed that you have to do all of that. But think of it. When you're in a good frame of mind, it's of course you're going to brush your teeth, that kind of thing. So, whatever is a normal routine for you, do your routine. And then the second step is to take one step a day in the direction where you're going. So, and then definitely have an accountability log for that. So, if you're in a bad reinvention, and another reinvention that people are getting these days is a health diagnosis that's not pretty, and that's a major reinvention. Empty nest is a, there's just so many reinventions, but I think it's important to see them as that so that I've done this before, how did I do it last time? And so, if I like the accountability log. And if you write down, today's date and whatever action you took today, I only want you to take one action a day, and it can be teeny tiny. And sometimes you're going to find out that that action was a sidestep or a misstep. It doesn't make any difference. You took it. That's all that counts. Write it down. And if you're in a bad reinvention, that's it. Amen. You're done. Go back on the sofa, get your back box of tissues and cry a little bit more. But if it's a happy reinvention, if it's the college kid who's got his degree in English and what do you do with it? Well, maybe he should use it's actually a hack for people who have ADD to set a timer, and
Okay.
you have to do it for however long. So set a timer for 10 minutes and maybe you can do two or three Google searches in your field, or maybe you can make one or two phone calls. So you maybe you can do more than one thing. But then I also want to pull back and say, if you have a really stellar day and your accountability log shows that you did 17 things, that has no bearing on tomorrow. Don't let that be a burden to you. Tomorrow, you only have to do one. And so, so I've done this personally. The first time I really remember doing it, though, the idea of the accountability log was so, second nature to me. I must have done it before, but was with Empty Nest. It was, on the sofa, feeling the silence was a weight pressing on my chest. I couldn't move. But and actually you can let yourself be on the sofa for a couple of days, but when it gets to be a couple of weeks, And so really what I did was the first phone call that I made and that I wrote down in my little green spiral notebook from the grocery store was I looked up I or I somehow found volunteermatch.com. And I started looking for volunteer opportunities. I was fortunate I didn't need a job. I was looking for volunteer activities. And I did that for 3, 4, 5 days. And I was set. I had some place to go. I worked for the March of Dimes. It was lots of fun, met lots of nice people. And I got off the sofa. So it really didn't take long. And I think if you hold on to your accountability log for the next time, it'll be so encouraging to see that it really didn't take you long to blast yourself into the next piece of life.
What I heard there, though, was with empty nest, you were no longer really needed. Those people who needed you were gone. So your reinvention was something else that needed you. Is that sort of thing, that parallel, a part of it, or is that just a coincidence?
I think that that's a connection you would make, and if I was still going to Pam the psychologist, she would make.
That's my middle name. No, I'm just kidding.
But for me, it just So yeah, that's a nice correlation, but that wasn't how I was thinking of it. I actually, this is for your midlife ladies. I really struggled with empty nest over and over and over again. So first they all went to college. Okay. But when they did the things I really wanted them to do, I really wanted all my kids to get married and have children. When they got married, that was a little bit more empty nest because I was bumped down a notch. They still love me, but of course they have to love their
Other
spouse
people.
more or different,
Yeah.
and that person's going to come first. And then here came these, I've got 10 grandkids. Here started coming these kids. They still love me, but they don't have time for me, period. So I really, really struggled with empty nest until it was completely embarrassing to still be suffering from it for years and years and years and years.
Isn't it funny just how different we all are? Now, I think what I read in your book was you described that, like, that change as a little bit plus a little bit equals a whole lot. And I think to keep that in mind, and even as you were telling that story, I think about it in terms of so many women our age are looking at what they're going to do next, and it entails learning something, and oh, I can't learn that, or it's technology, and but when you start looking back again at all the times that you had to learn something new, you had to adapt, you had to figure it out. Again, you've done that a kajillion times in your life, so it's the same, only different.
It is. And I remember, this is so ridiculous, but I remember when a new mall got built in Cincinnati and I went to it and I came home and said to my daughter, "I will never know my way around that mall." How ridiculous, like the back of my hand, So, but then you can laugh at yourself because you've have face these kind of silly obstacles too. But I do want to talk about, to me, that is, to me, the a little bit plus a little bit equals a whole lot is really a corollary to, take one step at a time because you'll just see how far you go. So there is a story in High on Life that has that as its takeaway. And in that, I talk about, well, a variety of things. The impetus for writing that story was that I had just written my 100th blog. I mean, really? I write two blogs a week, so I can't do the math. How many years was I writing two blogs a week to have got crossed over the
Well,
100 mark?
50 weeks.
Yeah, and so I was only 50 weeks? 50 weeks. Okay,
I'm
50.
sorry, did I ruin
No, 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 no,
that for you?
no. No, if it's two a month, that would be 24 a year. So 100 would be 4 years, right? Well, we can't do math in our head anymore at this age. That's okay. Whatever. It was a long time.
Sorry, I thought you said 2 a week.
I was celebrating that I had,
100. Yeah, it's a milestone.
reached this milestone, but I didn't want to just boast about me. So I told other situations where a little bit plus a little bit equals a whole lot. And one of them was to talk about this guy that I went to high school with. His name's Mike Kahn. And he was a trial attorney, father of five. And he actually is a writer. And he wrote 11, I think, mysteries starring someone, his character was Rachel Gold, set in St. Louis, which is hometown for us. And he wrote like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 mysteries about her, right in smack dab in the middle of being an attorney and a full-time, and a father. And so when he presented a talk once, or I read an interview about him or whatever, he said he wrote one page a day, 365 days a year. And guess what? An average book is 300 to 400 pages. So every year he could turn out a book. And he wrote that one page after work, after the kids went to bed. Well, how astounding is that? Back to your person who has to learn Microsoft Word, or I don't know what are our social media, more likely
How to
they're
do a podcast.
they have to do a podcast. Their boss wants them to post on TikTok, really? Oh my God, you can do it. You can do it. And when you do it, pat yourself on the back and you can do more and more and more. So when I talk about if I ever wrote a book on how to reinvent yourself, I would give my two-step program and I would have you with an accountability log. But I would also have you write a section where you keep a long running list of everything you've accomplished. If you ran the bake sale at the PTA, you ran the bake sale at the PTA
Yeah, no, for
and you
sure.
raised $400 for the elementary school or whatever. So I want you to keep that. And then another fun list that I think people should keep is these people are my friends. And I think you should write down everyone who you're friends with, because on those days when you're, on the sofa with the blanket over your head and you can't move, you feel like a social pariah. No one likes me. I don't have any friends. And you can go and look and see, well, actually, I do have a few friends. And this one I can only call when I'm happy and want to go sit at the bar and drink. But this one is real good at listening to problems or whatever, but at least you see you're not all alone. And of course, you're going to have people that you're acquaintances with all the way to bosom buddies, but that's the nature of the beast. I'm a past president of the Women's Auxiliary at my temple. And you have all kinds of members. You have the ones who are president. You have the ones who come to a meeting every now and again. You have the ones who only pay dues. But you need all those kinds of people in an organization, and you need all those kinds of friends. So, yeah.
Yeah, good to remember. Okay, so you did touch on this, and I said we're going to come back to it. You've written that the world is full of lonely people waiting for an invitation. Now, where do mid-age women actually look for new friends, and what keeps us from reaching out?
Well, I think fear keeps us from reaching out. And so there is a chapter in High on Life on how to find new friends. So you've kind of touched on a couple of different stories here, but there is a chapter on finding new friends, and there's three places to look. One is old friends that you might brush off the relationship and bring it, renew it. And then there's your broad family. So by this I mean in Hebrew there's a word for it. It's a machatonim, if you can believe such a crazy word. But that is the name of my relationship to my daughter's mother and father-in-law. So our children are married, and my Lisa and their Tyler are married, and they have three wonderful children who we are co-grandparents of. Well, why wouldn't I love Sue and Steve? Why not? We love the same people. We hang out at birthday parties and soccer games together. And if I didn't love them, I better learn how to love them, because I'm going to see them all the time, So that's another place to look. And then any organization that you're in, or any club that you join, or you go to a book club at the library or whatever, there's other people around you, and it is never too late to make a new friend. So one of my newer friends is Vera, and we met at a cancer caregiver support group when my significant other, Big Irv, was dying and when her husband was also very ill. And we're dear friends. We go to the movie every Sunday and either out to ice cream or out to dinner. So those are three places to look for friends. But you also said all these lonely people. So that was out of the story about Thanksgiving and about, that again, with this empty nest. Your Thanksgiving table is not what Norman Rockwell painted. That is a static picture that's never changing. But you can't be like that in life, or you're going to be really bent out of shape. So the takeaway from that story is blessed are the flexible, for they will not be bent out of shape. So when your Thanksgiving table isn't what you want it to be because your kids aren't coming home from college and because your best friend is sick or whatever it is, you have to be proactive and you have to make sure there are people at your table. And it's in that story that I say it is not my opinion, it is a fact that there are a bunch of lonely people out there, and you can find someone to come sit at your table for Thanksgiving. So in my case, that would be looking to people I know at my temple. In my case, that would be looking to people I know from the library book club. It's all of those kinds of people. You have their phone number for some reason, or you're going to see them every other Tuesday. Invite them over. They're looking, and it's a win-win. It's a win-win. You then have people around your table, and and maybe even give yourself a gift if you manage to have 8 people at your table for Thanksgiving. Go buy yourself a sweater at the mall.
Well, it's funny because I used to do that even when my children were small and at the table. And we just called them our orphan dinners. So if you didn't have anywhere else to go, they were always welcome at our dinner table. And so as the kids grew and moved on, sometimes there were different people at the table, sometimes it was the same old people at the table. But yeah, I just called them my orphan dinners, and it was always
I
fun.
loved it. I
Yeah,
loved
yeah.
it. My grandma was like that. She
Oh,
always had
okay.
extras at
Yeah.
the table. Yeah.
And as time changes, and certainly now, even with my own children, I find food likes, dislikes, all that sort of stuff that weren't invented when I was young, is we often do what we call a bit supper, and it's a bit of this and a bit of that, and people bring stuff, and it's potluck, and it just we have a great time. There's a
Wow.
ton of food, and I always say, if you push away from my table hungry, that's your own fault. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, it is so much fun. And as I say, it becomes sort of almost like a potluck kind of instead of
Yeah.
the big dinner. It's
Well,
a bit
but
dinner.
that's a whole important story in itself. That is, people need to hear that, really, because it can be so intimidating to have, to have people for dinner or whatever. So, have everything, quote, catered from Costco. If it wasn't a prepared food at Costco, it's not on the table, and it just doesn't make any difference. Just get the people together. So I think, some of my single friends, they won't go to a movie by themselves. They won't go out to dinner by themselves. I don't feel that way. Now, I won't go to out to a fancy restaurant on a Saturday night by myself. Now, if you offered me $100 to do it, oh, sure, I'll do it. But that would be a little embarrassing. But I have friends who just would not do that. Why? Why? So, and
Who
this
knows?
is another single woman's tip, though. You can also invite yourself along with couples, and you have to say to them, though, I don't want you to treat me because I want you to invite me to come again. So I'm paying my own way. And then when the bill comes and the husband pulls out, the credit card, you can't go searching in your purse. You have to be ready with your credit card to put out there. And if they say no, then you have to be ready with cash money and say, let me pay the tip and give them, 20s, 10s, whatever you need. And I want to do this again. You have to let me pay. So that's how a single woman can even go out with married folks if she tries hard enough.
There we go. Okay, there's a two more. I'm just watching the clock here. There's two more things I want to touch on, is forgiveness and gratitude. So let's start with forgiveness, because to me that's sometimes harder.
So back to the Billy Joel story. In Judaism, on Yom Kippur, there was once a rabbi who did a children's service, and he gave all of the kids one of those magic slates that you draw and then you lift the film and it disappears. And he had them draw a picture of something they did wrong in the year, and then he had them erase it. And he told them in so many words, "You are forgiven." And so that's where it is at Yom Kippur. If you have to make amends to people, but the understanding is you are forgiven. So everyone is forgiven. So if you, by God, so if you still hold a grudge against somebody, you're holding that person to a higher standard than God. That's kind of audacious, Is that the right word? I don't think that's the right word. That's ballsy. Oops. Anyway. And then the same by the same token, you have to forgive yourself for your failings because God has forgiven you and you can't hold yourself in to a higher standard than God does. So I like that a lot. Now, I'm sure other religions have different things to say about it, but that's how it works in Judaism. So yeah, forgiveness.
A number of years ago, I interviewed a woman whose focus was forgiveness. And she also explained that it doesn't, like, say something really dreadful was done unto you. It doesn't change that fact. But to not forgive basically just eats away at you. Like, it doesn't change their life, the perpetrator's life. It just eats away at you. So if you can find your way to forgiveness, it doesn't change the fact that it happened, but it lets you move on from it.
Right.
So yeah, just it's
Yeah.
huge.
Yeah, it is. And, it's a whole theological study about the Holocaust and,
Oh yeah
and forgiveness there
yeah no
for
yeah
another day. Yeah.
yeah
Yeah. Yeah.
no, it's huge. Gratitude.
Gratitude. There's just always something to be grateful for. So, yeah, the my granddaughter's soccer game. I wrote the story, 30 Reasons to Be Grateful. The takeaway at the end is there's always something to be grateful for. But I'm a nervous Nelly about parking, and the school where the soccer game was under construction, and the parking lot was a mess, and someone was blocking the way, and I was all bent out of shape, and I went one lap around the parking lot, and it's like, okay, I'm going one more lap, and if I don't find a place, I am going home. And of course, I found a place. And then I get out of the car. It's hot as blazes out there. And it's like, which field? Which field? Well, my son-in-law was the coach and he's tall. So I could see Scotty B. I have a son, Scott, and a son-in-law, Scotty. Yeah. I could see Scotty B. So I was grateful. When I sat down in my chair, I realized I had neglected to bring an umbrella to put over my head. But I did find a ponytail holder in my purse so I could tie my hair back. So it was all of these kinds of things. It was like they just kept multiplying, just so much really to be grateful for. And the funny one I say is that another grandma had her shirt on inside out, but it wasn't me. So,
Well, once you put it on inside out, you can't change it, or it's bad luck. Did you not
I
know that?
didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness.
My God,
Old
thank you for
English thing, my mother. Oh yeah.
that tip. You probably feel you have to go out the same door you came in. Do you like that one too?
Oh
You
yeah, no, I haven't heard that. No,
haven't.
my mother had all
Heard.
sorts of Oh dear. But yeah, and it's funny because people, I hear people say, like, well, what have I got to be grateful for? Maybe they've just lost their job or whatever. But if you start small, like, you got a green light.
Yeah,
Thank you.
definitely. Definitely.
Just somebody smiled at you in the supermarket.
Right.
Thank you. Just those little tiny moments. And to start noticing those, and when that becomes commonplace, shall we say, then you can't help but start noticing the other stuff that, yeah, we really should be grateful for.
Well,
And
and I think this is kind of a backwards way of looking at gratitude. But if you think to yourself, it could always be worse, you know? So I could have gotten fired and evicted, you know, from my house. I only got fired.
well, you
So
know, I heard a thing recently, and it just really struck home, is that maybe the bad luck that you just had saved you from worse luck.
oh, I like that too.
And I went, oh my goodness, yeah, I'd never thought about it that way. But you start putting it that way, and you think, yeah, okay, I'll take this piece of bad luck, because the other one that I've dodged, it might be huge.
That is so good. I love that. There is a new kind of gratitude that I discovered when I was, let's see, oh, 10 years younger. And it's being grateful for what you can do today that you might not be
Yeah,
able to do
as we
tomorrow.
get older. Oh, absolutely.
So I had overheard two doctors talking to each other at the hospital when my dad was ill. And one said, "How are you?" "Fine." And the other says, "I'm good too. I can still take my meals upright." And I thought, I never knew sitting up to eat your meal was a sign of wellness, you know? But
Yeah.
here's my dad. I mean, this was his final illness. He would have died within a week of that. He couldn't eat, much less. You know, much less sit upright. So there's so many of those things too that that as
Yeah,
we
depending on
age.
which circle you travel in. Well, as I said, I had a career in elder care, so yeah, no, I can hear that one really well. What haven't we talked about that you want mid-age women to think about?
Let's see. I want them to think about their own stories, because we all have them. And maybe this is, a page to put in that journal that I should write about on personal reinvention. But when you're giving yourself credit for all the things you can do, the bake sale for the elementary school or whatever, also, they have to write down the stories of their life. I mean, it's part of their legacy. And when they look back on what they wrote, they'll realize how they had reinvented themselves, or gotten over an obstacle or whatever. I'm real in favor of journal writing. I don't do it every day. I don't want to, don't it's not a homework assignment. No. But to tell the stories of your life. So one of the stories in High on Life touches on my grandson, Josh. This always makes me laugh. He was a little kid, and I was wearing an animal print sweater when he came in, and he said, "Why is Marmol's my grandma name? Why is Marmol dressed like a zebra, giraffe?" I don't know which one he said. And I just laughed so hard. If I didn't write that down, I
Yeah, it
got
would have been
10
lost.
grandkids. It would not exist. That story
Yeah.
would not exist. So Simon and Garfunkel said it in their song, "Preserve your memories. They're all that's left you." So I encourage everyone to write it down. Just write it down.
And again, I'll say that I have never met a person over the age of 80, 85 who said, yeah, I'd like to preserve my stories. They all say, I've done nothing of interest. Oh, there's nothing. And yet they'll tell you a story just verbally, and you're going like, oh my God, how, you've got to tell people this. It's an amazing story. And because of the time they lived in, or the people they met, or something, but yet you always sort of discount your own life as just ho-hum. And it's not.
It is. My grandma, when I once drove through a car wash with her, she was so tickled. She called a car the machine. "You drive the machine through the bath, you know?" It's like, she was so tickled. Well, if she told that story on herself, people would be so tickled, or her great other grandchildren, her great grandchildren, that that was such a delight to her, that that was so novel, because we didn't always have car washes. We used to have a hose and a bucket, you know.
I have a page on my website, and it's stories my mother told me. And I love the fact that my grandson, who's 16 now, he'll do something. Oh, it doesn't really matter what it is. And I'll look at him and he says, "I know my great grandmother would have said whatever." And I think, "Mom, you're living on in the stories, you know." So it's kind of fun to, yeah, to perpetuate that whole family tradition kind of
Oh,
thing. Yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, but you're also going to remember what he said. Write it down.
No,
Write
yeah.
it down.
Okay, we've talked about your book all the way through. Tell us about your book.
Oh, okay. Well, High on Life, spelled that funny way, CHAI, like high tea. Chai tea, excuse me, chai tea. And it's 36 stories, everything from belly fat to Billy Joel. You've heard about Billy Joel. So the belly fat is I went to a class and we had to write a love letter to some part of our body. And I don't particularly love my belly. And I wrote a love letter to it and thanked it for what it did to get in that shape, which is that it gave me my son Scott, my daughter Shane, my daughter Lisa, and from them, 10 grandchildren. You've done a lot. Of course you're huge, you know. So that's the self-acceptance. So there's every topic in there. So self-acceptance, self-esteem, power of positive thinking, all of those things, they're all slices, and they're all told with some kind of something that happened to me. But again, it's not exactly biography because me telling you about my granddaughter's soccer game, a biographer would never include that. And, it's just the stories of your life, and we all have them, and they all have so much to teach us. When I was newly divorced, there was a sign on a vacant, I can't say that word, vacant field that said opportunity. And I, so you could build here, whatever. And I thought, if that, empty piece of ground has some kind of a future, I guess I must too. So these are the kinds of things that I talk about. It's not rocket science. The things that I talk about, forgiveness and so forth, I haven't mastered all of that. I'm trying to learn all of that too. And I think that that all comes across that I'm very honest. And so I hope it's like talking. I hope when you read these stories, you feel like I'm sitting in the room talking just to you. And I hope that you hear me in the background saying, life is difficult, but you can do it. Rah, rah, rah.
Well, and I will admit too that in reading the chapters, because as you mentioned earlier, you finish with like that one line sort of summation. It might be humorous, it might be thoughtful. I found myself like, okay, I got to get to the end of this chapter. I'm really curious which one. Like, can I think of what she's going to, because I have 400 memes on my computer. Can I think which line she's going to use?
What
So
she's
yeah,
going to say.
it was good fun that way.
Yeah, well, that's what at the back of the book, all there's 39 memes, all 38 memes, because the story on self-care needed three memes because that was so important instead of just one. But they're all at the back of the book for those of you who don't have time to read, you know what I mean? Here's the summary at the back of the book. And and the stories are so short, so it's perfect bathroom reading. You can do it.
Okay. I didn't do that. Okay, where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
I am Lori Kleiner Eckert everywhere. So I'm LoriKleinerEckert.com for my website, LoriKleinerEckert.etsy.com for my Etsy shop, Lori Kleiner Eckert at any bookstore, Amazon. Oh, only on Amazon or on my Etsy shop. There's a companion journal to High on Life so that you can record your own story. So, but that's only available on Amazon and on my Etsy shop. But if you're looking for me on Facebook, on Twitter, X, I guess it is now, any of those places, put in Lori Kleiner Eckert and I will pop up. And I write all of these slice of life blogs, so they seem to be listed individually on the internet. So you pull me up, you're going to pull up a million things. Oh, and I also, we didn't say, because I want to get people to my website to see the homepage that announces the High on Life, I also write book reviews, so I'm a
I
book
was just going to ask you
writer.
about that. I got
Yeah,
your website on my other monitor here.
I am a prolific reader. I read about 3 dozen books a year, and I write reviews of them. And so those are up on my website, and you can join the Book Lovers Club, and you'll get those sent to you whenever a new one posts. And it's a lot of fun. And then, because I'm a resourceful woman, I have another income stream. I am
Okay,
a.
no, you see, time
Oh,
out.
we can't say that. Oh, okay.
Because I have this line before we close. It says, "Can I ask you a personal question before we close?"
Oh,
And
okay.
you say, "Oh, absolutely, Agnes."
Oh, okay.
You're supposed to say that.
Absolutely. What is your question?
Quilting. Quilting. Tell us about quilts. Is that what you were going to talk about? Your other income source?
No.
Oh, you're a woman of mystery. Okay, well, tell us about quilts and then tell us about your
Okay.
income source.
Yeah, so when I was a motivational speaker, and my first two books are illustrated with quilts that have words and symbols pieced into the design. So they say things like, I love my life, gather all you can, meaning, good memories, stuff like that, not material possessions. And so I do sell my quilt designs printed out on t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs,
Oh,
on.
it's the art, not the quilts, that's for sale.
Well, the art, let's see, the quilts, there are also a few quilts for sale.
Okay, yeah,
There's
because I'm
four
looking at these
quilts for
going like,
sale.
that's not easy work. I mean, that's a
Yeah,
lot of
no,
work
it's
goes into a
none of it
quilt.
is easy work. I'm a very good quilt technician, that's for sure. Yeah. One of the quilts is so funny. It says Queen Me, and it's a feminist version of checkers, and only the woman gets to play. She gets to play by her own rules and she wins, Queen Me. And then the checkers on the quilt are lapel buttons that say funny things like, Of course, I'm good and bad. I can sleep all day. Another one says, I will not obsess. I will not obsess. I will not obsess. So all kinds of funny things like that. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so that, yes. And so I sell my artwork printed out on giftware and I do sell some quilts on my Etsy shop. Yep. And my books, all my books are there. Yeah. And my other income stream is that I'm an affiliate marketer for Amazon, which I think you are too,
Oh,
probably.
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of
So that when
standard fare.
people read my book reviews, if they go to Amazon and make a sale, and make a purchase, I earn big bucks, like 40 cents, right? 23 cents. So don't be a writer and think you're gonna get rich quick. It ain't gonna happen, but it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah. If well, when your book, for example, is on your page at our website, that'll just be a link to Amazon because I can't be bothered putting the little rider in all the time. But I do have a book page, and all those books are my
That's
Amazon
great.
links. Yeah,
That's
so
great. And you too make 40 cents a pop.
yeah, well, I'm not going to retire on my income from Amazon, that's for sure. Okay, I think we've covered it. Your website link is in the show notes. All the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, if something Lori said sparked a memory, a smile, or even a quiet, I'd love to hear it. And what's one everyday moment that taught you something unexpected? And if you can't think of an answer to that question, go read Lori's book because it'll really prompt a lot of things. If this conversation reminded you of a sister, a friend, or someone navigating her own next chapter, please pass it along. Sometimes the right story lands at exactly the right moment. If you enjoy conversations that explore who we are becoming and how to live this chapter fully, be sure to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast so you don't miss what's coming next. If you'd like to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. It's where I share episodes first, and I'll be growing that platform out in the near future with reflections and links if you want to spend a little bit more time with these conversations. My usual reminder, both the resource page and the Start Here page at boomwithabang.com are expanding. Check them out regularly. Lori Kleiner Eckert, thank you for reminding us that life doesn't have to be perfect to be meaningful, and that even the ordinary moments deserve to be noticed, honored and maybe even celebrated. I really appreciate you sharing your stories with us today. So thank you.
Thanks so much.
Have a great rest of week.